Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the next session of the EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. The topic of the month is neuroinfections. My name is Tamara Khuletyani. I'm a neurologist from Tbilisi, Georgia. And to discuss about this topic, it's my pleasure to introduce to you Professor Johann Zellner. He is a full professor of neurology and chairs the neurology department in Mistelbach, Austria since 2019. Professor Zellner specializes in neuroinfections, autoimmune and global neurology, and is particularly interested in advancing neurology education. Moreover, he currently co-chairs the EAN Scientific Panel for Infectious Diseases and the NeuroCOVID Task Force of the European Academy of Neurology. The topic of today's discussion is the Epstein-Barr virus in the pathogenesis of multiple sclerosis. And I would like to ask the first question to Professor Zellner. Could you please tell us what is MS, multiple sclerosis, from a clinical viewpoint?
Thank you very much for the kind introduction. Multiple sclerosis is an immune-mediated disease that impacts the brain, spinal cord, and optic nerves. MS is also the most frequent cause of non-traumatic neurological disability among young adults in the Western Hemisphere. The prevalence of MS increased in every world region over the last 10 years. In detail, the estimated number of people with MS worldwide rose from 2.3 million in 2013 to 2.8 million in 2020. MS can occur at any age, but the onset usually occurs around 20 and 40 years of age. However, younger and older people can be affected. The ratio of woman to man is as high as 4 to 1. In MS, the own immune system targets myelin, the protective layer insulating wire-like nerve fibers, which subsequently disrupt signals to and from the brain. This interruption of communication signals causes unpredictable symptoms such as numbness, tingling, mood changes, memory problems, pain, fatigue, blindness, and paralysis. Everyone's experience with MS is different, and the neurological dysfunction may be temporary or long-lasting.
Thank you very much. We know that MS is a disorder about which not everything is known, but could you please tell us what is the current information that we know about the pathogenesis of MS?
Indeed, we do not know for certain what causes MS. The current beliefs, however, is that a combination of factors trigger the disease. Several lines of evidence support the assumption that MS is caused when people with the right combination of genes are exposed to some trigger in the environment. There is also evidence that ethnicity and geography play a crucial role. To identify the cause of MS, research is ongoing in the areas of immunology, epidemiology, genetics, and infectious agents, such as viruses. Understanding what causes MS will speed up the process of finding more effective ways to treat it and ultimately cure it. Ideally, we will find a way to prevent MS from occurring in the first place. A growing number of research findings indicate that previous infection with Epstein-Barr virus contributes to the risk of developing MS. This does not mean, however, that MS is an infectious disease. MS is not an infectious disease, but latent viruses may play a role in triggering MS symptoms and disease activity. The viruses presumably involved in MS, such as Epstein-Barr virus and human herpes virus 6, are infectious, but MS itself is not. MS is not directly caused by germs that enter the body and is not passed by from one person to another. So you cannot get infected with MS.
I see. And what have been the current advances in the understanding of this pathogenesis and the role of Epstein-Barr in MS recently?
This is a very important question. I will report about recent studies which provided the strongest evidence to date that Epstein-Barr virus is a trigger for multiple sclerosis. In detail, EBV is a human herpes virus which is transmitted primarily through saliva. It infects the immune system and it persists in a latent form in immune cells called B cells, and the virus lives there for the rest of your life. By adulthood, about 95% of us show evidence that we've been infected with EBV, and this is a virus that lives inside of us for all of our lives and in most cases does not cause any harm. Most people are infected with EBV when they are very young, at a time when it usually doesn't cause any or only mild symptoms. But if you get infected during adolescence or early adulthood, it can sometimes cause a disease called mononucleosis and lead to severe symptoms. The article I'm referring to by Dr. Kjetil Bornevik, published in the January 2020 edition of Science, is an extremely well-done study. What they showed was that the infection with EBV precedes and comes before any evidence of MS. Therefore, we are a lot closer to proving causation. And of course, the one piece of the puzzle left is to show that preventing EBV can prevent MS. In a cohort of more than 10 million people in the U.S. Armed Forces, the researchers evaluated infection status in serum samples of 801 individuals with a diagnosis of MS during military service, all but one of whom were EBV seropositive at diagnosis. They also included 1,566 carefully matched healthy controls. By focusing on a subset of people with MS and controls who were EBV seronegative at baseline, this longitudinal study showed that the risk of MS increased 32-fold after infection with EBV, but not with other viruses, as assessed by the use of unbiased serological screening. The study also established that EBV infection preceded the clinical onset of multiple sclerosis by a median time of 7.5 years. During this period, an increase in serum concentrations of neurofilament light chain, a biomarker that resembles neuroaxonal damage, was detected. These findings indicate that neurodegenerative pathology is a consequence of EBV infection during the pre-symptomatic phase of multiple sclerosis.
Thank you very much for this nice overview of the current information. And still, the EBV and the idea of EBV as a relevant environmental factor, is it controversial according to the current data?
In fact, a causal interpretation of these results could be influenced by confounding from other known or unknown risk factors for MS. For instance, another interpretation is that unrecognized immune dysregulation during the pre-symptomatic phase of MS increases susceptibility to EBV infection, a phenomenon also called reverse causation. However, both the strength and specificity of the association between EBV infection and MS development, together with the temporal relationship between EBV seroconversion and biomarker evidence of disease, argue against alternative explanations. By endorsing EBV as the leading cause of MS, the aforementioned study reignites research aimed at explaining how an ubiquitous infection might lead to MS in a relatively small number of susceptible individuals. Several hypotheses are under consideration and await conclusive demonstration. These hypotheses include, first, cross-reactivity between EBV and CNS proteins leading to the generation of autoreactive antibodies, autoreactive T cells, or both. Second, defective control of EBV infection and immortalization of autoreactive B cells. Third, persistent EBV infection in the CNS leading to activation of an antiviral immunopathological response and bystander neurodegeneration. Four, EBV interaction with and dysregulation of genes that predispose to MS, most of which regulate the host immune system and impact viral control. And eventually, the fifth hypothesis, infection with EBV genetic variants that could have a higher pathogenic potential in susceptible individuals.
Thank you. And this brings me to my next question. Do you think that EBV can be targeted in order to prevent or treat multiple sclerosis?
Exactly. From a clinical point of view, the recent scientific advances imply the need to explore whether EBV might be a target for therapies and interventions to reduce the risk and modify the course of MS. Ongoing clinical trials in patients with early or progressive MS using EBV-specific adoptive T-cell therapy will help us to understand whether fostering efficient immune control of EBV has beneficial effects. Although EBV-specific antivirals are not available yet, improved control of the infection could be achieved by a combination of several antivirals. Other promising options could be a vaccine for EBV in terms of a prophylactic vaccine or by reinforcing antiviral immunity in early multiple sclerosis in terms of a therapeutic vaccine. In the short term, it is worth considering whether many of the available therapies for MS interfere with EBV and the host. For instance, anti-CD20 monoclonal antibodies are among the treatments with the highest efficacy and selectively deplete B cells, the lifelong reservoir for EBV. Moreover, DHODH inhibitors such as teriflunomide have shown to decrease anti-EBV antibody titers. Importantly, the anti-EBV titers were also shown to correlate with brain atrophy and disease progression. This knowledge should foster studies aimed at exploring the correlation between therapeutic benefit and EBV infection status in people with MS.
Thank you very much, Professor Zellner, for this very nice update. It's been very educational for me, and I hope the audience enjoyed it too. And I would like to thank the audience for listening and to see you at the next EAN Cast Weekly Neurology session during this month. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you for having me.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.